Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Whether you're a fan of bourbon, scotch, tequila, rum, gin, whatever it is, VSLiquor.com has you covered. And here's the best part. Don't leave your home. VSLiquor.com is the most reliable alcohol delivery there is. Make sure to type in the code SPORTS when you check out, and you'll get 15% off your initial order. VSLiquor.com, proud partner of the Sliwa Show. Good topics. Great conversations right now on, obviously a number of different things. And for a time where we don't have sports, I will tell you, there's definitely not limited in our sports conversations, definitely not limited in our topics. But that's one I think is going to continue as we continue to talk about the NFL and we talk specifically about Colin Kaepernick. That is going to be one that definitely is going to be, just a conversation that a lot of people are going to have a lot to learn from, and a lot of people are going to have to put themselves in an uncomfortable position to learn and look at things from a different perspective. Okay, I do want to play one quick clip here. ESPN MLB insider Jeff Passan on GetUp, what the league is trying to do to bring up this 50-game season.
I think the league, Greeny, is trying to force the players to come somewhere into the middle. Because let's remember, the original proposal from Major League Baseball was for 82 games and a huge salary cut that was significant, particularly at the top end. The players came back with a 114-game schedule and no pay cuts, full pro rata. Both of those propositions were on like polar opposite ends. And frankly, neither was particularly realistic. And so what MLB is trying to do here by talking about the 50-game season is to push the parties somewhere into the middle. That's the hopes of this. But Rob Manfred does believe that he has the right, because of a March 26th agreement, to unilaterally impose a schedule of his desirous length. And 50 games would really go far for the owners who want to play fewer games.
Well, right now, that's Jeff Passan. Dylan Hernandez from the LA Times got a chance to connect with former Dodger Adrian Gonzalez. And it's, let's just say, Adrian, not too positive about baseball coming back. Dylan, thank you for doing this, bud. Appreciate the time.
Oh, no, thank you for having me on.
First thing I should do, Dylan, is when I give your phone number to my producer, I should give him the right number so that they're not calling you on the wrong number. So my apologies for that. Okay, so I got a chance to obviously read your article. But before we even get into Adrian Gonzalez, his comments on baseball returning in 2020, I'll ask you, just get your thoughts. Latest in baseball right now is the owners rejected that 114-game regular season schedule with no additional salary cuts, told the union that they're not going to make a counter proposal. What's next? What do you think, Dylan?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I do think that the things between the relationship between the union and the league have gotten frayed to the point where, right, the mutual distrust is, the acrimony is at such a level where I wouldn't be surprised, that something didn't happen. And if you kind of look at here too, what the two sides are doing really, they're basically pushing it, up to the point that this March agreement will let them, right? Obviously, the union believes that they have the right, right, that they are owed a prorated salary, so they're sticking to that, right? And according to that same agreement, the owners believe that they have the power to kind of set the length of the season. And so when I kind of look at this, it almost feels like both sides are protecting themselves in case this goes to a grievance hearing, right? If something doesn't get settled and, they start accusing each other of not negotiating in good faith, which, honestly, kind of looking at it from the outside right now, I think you could easily make that argument. I'm not really so sure, that the owners so much wanted to play as much as that they, wanted to kind of set these players up to look bad publicly so that when the, negotiations for the next CBA come around, you know, after the 2021 season, that at least in the public's eyes, that they will have the, you know, public sentiment going in their favor, just because I do think that ultimately, right or wrong, you know, most fans tend to look at the athletes and say, you know, kind of that greedy player narrative, so to speak, is kind of undefeated. So, you know, they
well, that's a good,
the league, you know, has played that one before. Yeah, keep playing the hits, right?
I was going to say, Dylan, that's a good partnership, right? Like that's exactly the type of partnership that you want to have, where, you know, like you just mentioned, this could be their strategy. Their strategy could be, like you mentioned, they're pretending like they're playing game when really they don't have an intention to play. And, you know, I will say, you could speak on this as well, that back in the 94-95 strike, of course, the circumstances were a lot different. Players got a lot of heat for it. A lot of finger was pointed at the players. I do feel this time around, not to say that the players every instance have looked good. They certainly have had made comments on social media where they got, you know, they got definitely got a lot of criticism from fans and media and so forth. But I feel that there's also going to be a ton of criticism towards owners if this season doesn't happen. I mean, owner of the Cubs, I don't know if you saw this conversation, but owner of the Cubs, this is just like a perfect example, spoke with ESPN's Jesse Rogers, who, by the way, his team is worth $3 billion, whose net worth is $900 million. You know, talked specifically about, well, you know, you don't really see how much money that we're not making. A lot of our money, Tom Ricketts, who's the owner of the Cubs, I'll actually read you the exact quote. Most baseball owners don't take money out of their team. They raise all their revenue they can from tickets and media rights, and they take out their expenses, give all the money left to their GM to spend. And it goes on, continues on his quote. That's just one example of somebody I feel like is tone deaf, and nobody wants to hear excuses right now. They definitely don't want to hear it from somebody that's worth $900 million.
Yeah, you know, that said, right, you know, if I were to ask people of L.A., you know, who owns the Dodgers, right, it's this hedge fund out of Chicago. Mark mm-hmm. Walter is the head of it. You know, could most people pick Mark Walter out of a lineup? I'm not so sure, right? Now, they could pick out, you know, Clayton Kershaw or Justin Turner or any number of these guys, you know, that play on the team. And I do think that that's kind of that thing, right, is that that emotional connection that fans have with the players, I do think in cases like this get turned around. Now, to your point, right, I do think that the modern fan is probably more educated than he was 20, 30 years ago, just because, again, the internet, right, the people that are really into baseball, you know, really have an opportunity to learn as much about it as they want. Now, that said, I don't think, I mean, how many fans are really diehards, though, right? Like 5%, 10%, maybe, you know, so I think the casual fan, though, you know, again, they don't really know who owns the team, and, you know, they don't know who the president of the team is. What they know are the guys on the field, and those guys will end up, you know, kind of taking the heat there. So I do think, you're right, in this case, if the owners kind of play for a tie, where as long as we don't look worse than the players, they know that the players will wind up taking most of the heat.
Well, I think at the end of the day, Dylan Hernandez from the LA Times joining the Sliwa Show, I think, Dylan, I think ultimately both sides need each other. So this is why I scratch my head, because I do feel, maybe I'm wrong on this, but let's use me as a casual fan. NBA is my favorite sport. NFL, you know, and love watching the NFL. Major League Baseball, it's not on the top of my list, but I watch baseball, and I certainly spend a lot of time watching the postseason. It's actually one of out of all the sports out there, for some reason, postseason just gets me for Major League Baseball. If they didn't find a way to make this happen, and you see the NBA did, and you see, let's say, NHL and MLS, and then in the fall, football comes, we'll see what happens with college, I will encourage and I will use my mic. You know what? Don't support baseball. That's not right that baseball is looking – they're not looking out for fans. They're not looking out for the best interests of the sport. They're not looking out for the next 5 years, 10 years. They're looking out just for themselves right now. That's a tough pill to swallow, and maybe that diehard fan is going to go back no matter what. But someone like me, I do feel it will stick in the back of my mind that wasn't right that you didn't try to accommodate to your fan base.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, right, and I think that a lot of people are going to feel the way you did, like, you know, like you just mentioned, and it will take something extraordinary to bring the fans back, right? Like last time, it was the big home run chase, McGuire and Sosa. You know, now they test for drugs, so you couldn't do that again. But, you know, they're going to, right, maybe it's going to be kind of a young, exciting player. They're going to need to rely on something that really can't be planned for, basically, right? These are, sure. These things happen organically. You can't plan a home run chase. You can't, you know, just kind of, recreate, you know, create a superstar and just kind of plant them there. You know, one interesting conversation I had with an agent about, you know, just kind of this entire situation. And I was speaking about how, but it, you know, you bring up the NBA. I think that of all the major sports leagues, it's probably the one league that at least looks like the least stupid compared to all the other ones, right? They seem the least, right? They're the least tone deaf. You know, they, you know, manage not to stick their foot in their mouths too much. They don't make too many bad decisions.
Plan, you know, unity, not, feel like they're working together.
Right. And I think, right, and I brought that up, right? The fact that, you know, in that sport, it seems the league and the players work together more. You know, and this baseball agent actually brought up actually what I thought was a very good point, which is that, well, of course the owners are playing along with them. You know, these guys are massively underpaid, right? Take a guy like LeBron James, who, you know, can not only by himself change the, the fortunes of a franchise, but also that of a city, right? There's a downtown Cleveland now because of LeBron. You know, that LeBron is probably massively underpaid, right? And, you know, why did that happen? It's because of the salary cap. And, you know, and I think that in baseball, on the player's side, that there is this kind of pride that they have about not having given into that salary cap yet. You know, that 94-95 strike was over, right? The owners wanted to implement a salary cap. Players said no, went on strike. Eventually that cap didn't get implemented, right? And then in the subsequent years, we saw those big A-Rod contracts and, you know, the Garrett Cole contracts and, right, and you mentioned Adrian Gonzalez, right?
He himself
talked about, you know, my deal was possible because those guys went on strike and made those sacrifices for us. And so I do think that there is this thing of like, okay, we're going to be the ones that don't give in here, right? And yeah, you know, as far as kind of the good of the sport, it's kind of unfortunate that it's going to go that way, you know, and I think that that was kind of Adrian Gonzalez's, you know, one of his points was that, hey, look, I get it, right? It, you know, this game is for the fans. You know, and he said to himself, you know, when he spoke to me, you know, and he talked about, I understand that this looks really bad right now. People are losing their jobs and we're kind of fighting over, right, the players and the, right, and the owners are fighting over massive amounts of money. That looks bad. I get that. That being said, that doesn't mean the players should, you know, concede to a deal that isn't fair, which I kind of get also, right? So, I'm not really so sure that this is kind of a fixable situation just because, you know, for the good or the bad, this kind of this labor thing is just kind of part of the baseball culture too, right? It's, you know, they're, you know, dating back to like the 1970s. How many work stoppages have there been, you know, some 6, 7, 8, somewhere in that number, right? So, you know, and if anything, right, this is one of the greatest stretches of labor peace that they've had. And, you know, unfortunately, the old tradition has come back. yeah, I kind of don't really know what to say other than I just kind of think it's kind of part of the game almost, you know, fortunately or, you know, unfortunately.
Dylan Hernandez from the LA Times joining the Sliwa Show. Dylan, so ultimately, you know, I know this is just a guess, right? Nobody has the answer to this. What do you think does happen? I mean, do you feel that they're going to eventually figure this out? By the way, do you feel other sports like the NBA, who should be probably solidifying everything by tomorrow, if let's say the NBA comes back and now all of a sudden, you know, we're obviously talking about LeBron James and we're talking about all these great players and these athletes and this is what it's going to look like structurally. And do you think they're going to feel more pressure to say, guys, we have to find a way to get this done? Or do you feel no, it could go either way? If it doesn't happen, you wouldn't be surprised, or maybe you feel it's a greater likelihood that it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, these sports are kind of, they exist in their own bubbles, right? I mean, you know, you and I, we kind of jump from sport to sport, but you know, I just remember my days just as a Dodgers beat writer where you're just there. I mean, you really kind of don't see the outside, right? And you know, and if we're going to be honest too, right, this whole thing about, you know, baseball and its popularity relative to basketball, that fight was lost a long time ago, right? You know, I just remember a couple of years ago when the Dodgers were, you know, went back to the World Series. I think they might have still been in, yeah, right, when they played the Red Sox. They were kind of opening up over there, and, right, and LeBron was playing his first game for the Lakers. What was the bigger event in L.A.? It was LeBron, right? And we're talking about a World Series here. So, You know, I think that battle's already kind of been lost. You know, that said, I think baseball, despite, you know, it's kind of adapted to becoming more of a regional sport. And, you know, despite that, right, they still generate $11 billion of revenue a year, you know. So, yeah, I do think it's unfortunate, again, from a cultural relevance standpoint, yes, you know, the game isn't doing as well as it used to, obviously, but from a revenue standpoint, I think that I'm not really so sure that they think that this is a major, major problem.
Man, that loses me. And I don't question that. You know, Dylan, like when you say that, I don't question that they don't think it's a major, major problem, because it just seems, and I've, you know, preached this, it's not just me, everybody has, right? No way there can be, they can really be, and I've used the word, no way they could be that stupid to think that they can just decide, okay, well, let's not have a season. I mean, I always look at things big picture. Invest for each other down the road. Invest for the future of baseball. But it doesn't seem like that's – it doesn't seem like and maybe they're doing that indirectly, right? Maybe part of their strategy as well, that's why the players are doing it. They're trying to invest in the future of baseball long term. But I just think, look, at a time like this, everybody is a little bit on edge. Sports is never going to be more important than the real issues going on in the world, but sports is still important. And, you know, the way I started the show off tonight, Dylan, I just talked about how, you know, it's exciting to have some positive news in general, right? There's a lot of things that, you know, we haven't talked about over the last few months that has been much positivity. And I thought the NBA is shedding some light of positivity. I almost want to try and will baseball to continue to move forward, but I don't have that much confidence, or I'm hearing from people that don't have that much confidence.
Yeah, and the funny part here too, right, is that this corona, I mean, you know, can they even pull this off? I mean, which is a whole separate conversation. We're not even talking about the coronavirus part of this thing, right? I mean, the owners are obviously concerned enough about the possibility of the coronavirus wiping out the postseason.
Sure.
Right. That's one of the reasons they want to keep the regular season as short as possible, so that if this thing boomerangs back, they, you know, they have a better chance of getting the postseason.
The second wave, right.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, I mean, I don't know, you know, because with baseball, like basketball, you can kind of do a bubble. You don't need much real estate. I mean, baseball is a sport where big rosters, big field, you know, there's going to be travel involved, obviously. You know, in Japan, they're set to go off in a couple more weeks. You know, they just had to cancel an exhibition game today because, you know, two players for the Tokyo Giants just tested positive. And for all we know, that whole team is infected now. And so who knows if they're even going to be able to pull this off. You know, and meanwhile, right, you have like the owners here now kind of making their, you know, their product, so to speak, right, which is the players, right? That's what sells the game. They're trying to make these guys look bad. It's really an act of self-sabotage here, you know, and you talk about kind of the future of the game. I mean, the, you know, cutting the draft to five rounds at a time when you're losing athletes to other sports, right? You know, in a five-round draft, Matt Kemp does not get drafted. You know, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking of a guy who, who was a basketball player through high school, you know, kind of, right, they took a flyer on him, I believe in eight or nine or somewhere around there. That guy doesn't get drafted this year, you know, so, and, you know, who knows, maybe he goes on to play basketball and, you know, does well in college and all of a sudden you lose him to another sport. You know, baseball is not in a position to be losing athletes right now. And that's, and I totally agree with you. There is no, nothing that the owners have done to me points to them like having like real kind of foresight here in terms of, hey, what do we think about what's going to happen here, you know, 10, 20 years? I mean, it's not only are they cutting the draft, they're trying to gut the minor leagues and get rid of a bunch of affiliates. You know, in this situation, I'm guessing a guy like Albert Pujols, you know, doesn't even get a shot, right? So, yeah, I'm kind of down in terms of just like where this whole enterprise is kind of headed, you know, and I think that you know, a lot of it is just kind of has to do with the fact that, you know, compared to other sports, yes, it is harder to kind of manage. And, you know, from if you're an owner, right, in basketball, it's pretty easy because there's a salary cap there, and there's only so much. Football is kind of same thing, right? There's only so much the players can budge on. And, you know, relatively speaking, baseball is kind of hard because the players still have rights. And, you know, on one hand, I like the fact that the players can still kind of stand up for what they, you know, what they feel they deserve. You know, on the other hand, one of the bad things is that it turns this relationship into one that's very acrimonious and, in this case, self-destructive.
Dylan, I greatly appreciate the time and obviously your insight. It's a great article right now. Dylan Hernandez, LA Times, former Dodger Adrian Gonzalez does not see baseball returning in 2020. Dylan, let's catch up soon. Hopefully next time we talk, we're all wrong and baseball's coming back. Let's see what happens.
Hopefully the world's in a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. So thank you, Dylan. Appreciate the time, bud. You too. All right. That's Dylan Hernandez right there. All right. We'll see how baseball plays out. It's one of those that I think every single day that goes by, I think I lose confidence that baseball will figure it out. I hope I'm wrong. 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who is working as a healthcare provider, firefighter, EMS worker, or a food service professional, nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. with your first and last name, city, and occupation, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift to include $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, and Shooteria.com. So thank you to our partners, and thank you to obviously all those who are frontline workers. Halftime coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Just a quick reminder, Bao Nguyen, director of the new 30 for 30 B Water, he's coming up at 8:30. Obviously, the focused on Bruce Lee's life and journey premieres this Sunday, part of a 30 for 30 at 6 p.m. Fellas, how we doing? How we doing over there?
I can't wait for that documentary. I'm ready. I might have a glass of water and just be sipping on that.
You know what? Here's the thing: is the one thing about Bruce Lee, and I'm going to learn a lot about Bruce Lee in the documentary. I just kind of know what's out there on the surface. You know, he passed away. I think it was in 73, maybe 72. I wasn't born until 82. I know you guys were pretty much 10 years after that. So it'll be nice to have somebody who admires Bruce Lee as much as he does, and is obviously the director of this 30 for 30, where he can really kind of explain his life, his journey. It's going to be great when it comes out.
No, definitely. I'm excited to find out more about, you know, how, and we know the Bruce Lee, the legend, the person, you know, the martial artist, but you're definitely going to see an insight of how he became the person that we all know he is today. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's by the way, when I was doing some research, for the interview with the director, man, what a beautiful statue of Bruce Lee in Hong Kong. So if you've never seen this statue, just Google it. I mean, it looks so legit. I mean, if that's not Bruce Lee and just the way they kind of portray him, it's a beautiful, beautiful statue. So if you get a second, take a look at that. Okay, I got a question for the both of you guys here. With everything that's been going on, I know, how freaking – does he just not look like the man? Does he not just look like the man in that statue?
I want to go to that statue and just pose next to it. I wonder if it's like life size or if it's bigger.
Yeah, I'm going to image it and see who's next to it. I think they said there was another place across the country. Maybe it was like
semi life size. I found a picture with other people on it, and it looks not too much bigger.
I wish it was just huge. You know what I mean? Like, I wish it was just one of those. It was just like 15 feet. Oh, yeah, I'm seeing the people right now. But it's a beautiful, beautiful statue. I mean, that's as good as it gets. Okay, so here's my question to the both of you. With everything going on right now, we've obviously spent a lot of time on the show. We've done it this week. We were doing it over the weekend, a little bit last week. All these protests going on. Curtis, have you ever been to a protest? Have you ever gone to a protest?
Yeah, I kind of mentioned it the other night. I was on when I was going to CSUN my last semester. There was a pretty big protest actually on campus that that we had. It was regarding the. It was when the CSU and all that they were pretty much raising the prices for our tuitions and all that.
Yep.
So that was my first real kind of thing. But besides that, not really. It's just kind of been like I've always just kind of been wrong place, wrong time with those, and kind of
okay. So, here's a question: that protest, did it? What was the end result? Did it have some impact? How do you think it did?
I mean, they got. I remember we got a statement from the school president. I don't know how much changed after that, but I mean, you know, the next, you know, 6 months later, there was a news report that, you know, the CSUs were taking money out of the tuition funds and stuff like that. So, I mean, eventually maybe that caused someone to look into stuff, but, they pretty much, it got acknowledgement from higher ups and that was pretty much it.
So here's why I asked the question. Now, Jess, I'll ask you in just a second as well, but I asked the question because of this. This obviously is not the first time there's been protests, and there have been protests on a number of different things. This one obviously focused on this police brutality and equal rights for African Americans. So that's the goal with the protests going on right now. I feel this is just my personal opinion that these are very, very impactful protests. And I hope it leads to some change. I hope it puts so much pressure on the police force. I hope it educates an incredible amount of citizens, including myself. I'm sure the both of you, we can all be more educated on people's rights. And I know I can decipher what's right and what's wrong. But at the same time, just listening and getting a perspective from others. So I do feel that these protests are having some kind of impact. I was curious, Curtis, if you had ever gone on a protest and what it was for. Jesse, I'll ask you the same question.
Yeah, I walked out in high school. I think it was like 2006 or 2007. This wasn't a voluntary walkout. This is an organized walkout with a good portion of the school protesting the immigration legislations. And we walked from – I went to Eagle Rock High School, Go Eagles, which is right here in Eagle Rock, Northeast LA. Mm-hmm. We walked from there all the way to City Hall in downtown LA. And that – it was great. I enjoyed my
people
time.
Will
I'll
listen.
Tell you, my mom.
I'm telling you, but people – I get it, right? And, of course, you know, as a you know, any mother would be like, get your – you know what, back in school. What are you doing? But it's powerful. I mean, if you want people to listen, this is one of the things that we have the ability to do in this country. If you don't believe in something and there's enough people that don't believe in something and they feel a change needs to happen, you know, think about all the coverage that was going prior to this that was going to COVID-19, and rightfully so, right? And what's going to happen with this virus? And is the economy, are we going to get people to get back their jobs? So many millions of Americans filed for unemployment. That was a lot of the conversation. Look how quick every news network and what happened to Twitter. I make that point because I feel like these protests, and hopefully they continue to stay peaceful. I know there's been some looting and some violence, but at the end of the day, it feels like for the majority, they're peaceful protests. Jess, I genuinely feel they are impactful, and this is the right thing to do, and a lot of people are doing it.
They are, and I agree. And I would be out there if I could. I'm planning to go out there soon, but I just got tested for positive and it came back negative. And I haven't seen my goddaughter in over a year, and she's over one, and I need to go see her before. I want to make sure I see her and I get that out of the way because I've been putting it off for long enough. But once I go see her, I'm definitely going to make a point to go out there. I've had friends who go out there, and, you know, I want to go out there just to show support because, you know, I really feel for a lot of, you know, the community that's going on, and I don't think it's right, and I want to do something about it. And, you know, we have this platform, we get to talk about it. But for me, you know, I still want to do more. I still feel like there's a void for me to do more. So, you know, I'm planning to go out there as long as they go on. I hope they go on until something happens. But, you know, as long as it keeps going on, I'm going to find a day to get out there and join everyone.
Did I tell you guys, I took Twitter off my phone. And just because it was, it was just a lot, you know, to be honest, it was just kind of too much. And plus, you know, you also don't want to spend too much time just staring at your screen all day. Obviously I go on Twitter when I'm doing the show. I catch up from a sports perspective as best as I can, but man, from a political front, seeing everything that's going on, a lot of people talking, and that's really, I think, what the goal was at the end of the day. We use Kaepernick as an example. The goal is the awareness. And then hopefully from there, it takes steps towards positive change. We'll see what happens. There, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was saying a few days ago when he did that interview on CBS, and he's done a few interviews now, but he talked about history would say he's not confident change will happen, but he's hopeful. Let's see what happens. So we'll wait and see. Jess, what do you got, bud?
All right. So do you guys like Ben and Jerry's?
Yeah, I could do some Ben and Jerry's. Little
what's your
OG
favorite Ben
and
Jerry's? What's your favorite Ben and Jerry's flavor?
I'm trying to think. The last time I was there at Ben and Jerry's, let me think here. What'd be my favorite? I'm trying to look. I want to look here and see all the different flavors there. I mean, listen, I can easily go. I can easily go. I can easily go. What is it with the? I'm trying to think off the top of my head here, and I'm on the website. Curtis, jump in. What's your favorite flavor? Let me do some research
unfortunately,
here.
I don't really have very many Ben and Jerry's near me from where I was growing up. I know there's kind of one maybe half an hour away, but I guess more for ice cream in general. I'm a strawberry guy. I know it's not always the popular choice, you know, everyone loves the chocolate and all that, but I've always been a strawberry kind of guy for when it comes to, you know.
Get him out of here. I'm just kidding. Okay, I would go with, I'm a chocolate, you know, anything with peanuts as well. Their cookie dough is awesome. They do that cookie dough chunks or whatever that is, so that's a good one. Chocolate chip cookie, that's a go-to. Anything peanut butter I'm in. I got a lot, Jesse. I don't think you want me to keep going on this.
Oh, there's one called Half Baked.
Hey,
very familiar.
There we go.
That's one of my favorite ones.
Here comes
ones.
Curtis. Here comes
I was about to say that's one of my favorite ones.
Is there a more
ones,
than half?
What a shocker! What a shocker, Curtis. By the way, you know what's funny? Just to have the brand called Half Baked, or just that flavor.
Oh, they know what they're doing.
Can you just imagine how
100%
many,
they know what's
how many people walk in there and are like, I don't even know what's in there. But I'm going to take Half Baked.
Jerry knows.
That's why I took it. I buy it whenever it's the pints where it's on sale. But, you know, why I came up with Ben & Jerry's is, you know, as a bunch of other organizations and companies, they're releasing statements on what's going on in the world. I believe Ben & Jerry's took the cake with what they said.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what they said. They released on Twitter. And I quote, "The murder of George Floyd was the result of inhumane police that is perpetrated by a culture of white supremacy. What happened to George Floyd was not the result of a bad apple. Predictable consequence of racist and prejudiced system and culture that has treated black bodies as the enemy from the beginning. What happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis is the fruit born of toxic seeds planted on the shores of our country in Jamestown in 1619 when the first enslaved man and woman arrived on this continent. Floyd is the latest in a long line of names that stretches back to that time and that shore. Some of those names, as we know, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, Oscar Grant, Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Emmett Till, Martin Luther King Jr., most we don't." End quote. They went right at the root, true root of the problem, called it out, and said, "This is us as a company."
Well,
I need to go to the store and buy some more Ben & Jerry's.
Let me tell you something. Whether you go to Ben & Jerry's or not, by the way, on Twitter as well, their pinned tweet, "The murder of George Floyd was a result of inhumane police brutality that is perpetuated by a culture of white supremacy," and then a big block in black, "We must dismantle white supremacy," that part in white. I will say this. I tried making mention of this earlier today, and what I tried making mention of is, yes, there's a lot of people posting things, and it's a convenient time to do that. What you really, really want is when it's most inconvenient.
One of my favorite radio shows of all time is Max and Marcellus, right? And you hear me play Max.
Right.
You hear me play Kellerman a lot in First Take. I just, you know, respect that show. I respect the work they did. Kellerman always said, one of the things he always said was to do inconvenient things at an inconvenient time, right? It's very convenient right now for people to respond and put their have their message out. And I'm not saying it's not genuine. I'm not saying that it's not. But what you just read from Ben and Jerry's, that wasn't something where you felt somebody at that company said, guys, everybody else is putting something out. We got to put something out. No, it was well thought of. Looked like it came from the heart. They had a history lesson in there. In that, you know, message that they had, they got something across that was so much more important than, okay, we feel the pressure. Other people are putting it out. We have to put something out right now. Respect to Ben and Jerry's, you know, and that's – it's kind of funny, right? We're just joking around saying we're going to go in there and get something called half-baked, one of their flavors. Okay, you can go in there and you can enjoy it. And whether I'm going to Ben and Jerry's or I'm not going to Ben and Jerry's, I'm going to remember what they did at a time like this. They didn't do something just because they felt pressure. They had to. They did something that was actually genuine and well thought of. Fellas, I don't know about you guys, but that I had not read that statement before. I had not heard that statement. That's powerful stuff. Kudos to them.
I know Jess is.
Yeah, and it goes.
You go, Jess.
I'll go for Curtis.
All right. Well, I know Jess is a Niners fan, but I know there was a lot of bad response with, you know, everyone's was yesterday, you know, blacked out their social media feeds and the Niners just posted, you know, the black square and say, you know, we stand. And I know they got killed for that, you know, being, you know, that's where cap was last. And
of course,
if you're going to do it,
here's the thing. Again, it goes back to why are they doing this right now? They're doing it because everybody else is doing it and they have to do it. But you know what? I wouldn't just throw the 49ers under the bus. What about all the other teams in the NFL? You know, there's plenty of other teams out there. I mean, listen, I said this earlier on the show. I'm not trying to point people out. I'm not saying, you know, when I hear some of these quotes, Pete Carroll, I mentioned on Ringer's Flying Coach podcast, we owe a tremendous amount of to Kaepernick, and he goes on, and a lot of people are showing respect to Kaepernick right now. Yeah, of course you're going to do it now. Do it 2 years ago when nobody else was doing it. Do it when nobody else had the same thought process. Do it when it wasn't popular. That's when you know somebody means it. That's when you know it was genuine. Under these circumstances, you know, 49ers putting out Black Lives Matter, hashtag Blackout Tuesday. You have how many comments here? I want to see here from the 49ers. Yeah, I was going to say, usually when you have almost as many comments as you do likes, that's when you know a lot of people are not – they're not feeling it. All right, Curtis, what do you got over there, buddy?
We good? All right. Just want to make sure everyone got everything out before, you know. I'm just looking out for you guys.
Appreciate that.
I care.
Appreciate that.
At a half-baked attempt.
Curtis cares. Not yet.
All right, let's just continue then. Alan, I know we all have something that we love to do to decompress, whether it's something small or something we've been doing our whole lives or something new. I tipped my hat to Jesse with this, so he was kind of prepared with this. But I, as a kid, you know, had to deal with some stuff. Kind of heavy, won't go into it, but as a kid, I found video games as kind of an escape. And, you know, years later, I know Alan, you can attest to me and Jess always talking about games and the breaks and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have something, you know, that we, you know, our safe place, something we go do. So I just kind of want to ask you guys, what is that for you? I mean, I mentioned video games, but I also did a lot of drawing, which I stopped, but I kind of have been trying to get back into that. But what is it, you know, that you do to, you know, kind of ice everything out and just, you know, decompress?
Okay, quick question. What do you draw? Like, are you an actual artist? You spend a lot of time? I mean, explain it to me.
No, I have to see something, and then I kind of, not reinterpret, but I can kind of, like, look at something, and then, okay, then I'm going to draw this. I need a reference, though. Respect to those people. I've got one friend of mine, Julie, who's really great at art, but she can, you know, she can draw the detail of just someone's face and not even have to look at it. She can just think it up. I don't have that, but I can replicate or kind of add my own ideas onto things. But I have a lot of respect for people that can just imagine something out of nothing, because that's, you know,
yeah, that's not easy. Okay, for me, this has always been my go-to, and there's nothing more, if I just want to, you know, get things off my mind, or I want to just kind of decompress, you know, stop kind of thinking about what's going on. Maybe it was a long day at work, maybe whatever it was, right? Playing basketball has always been the greatest thing for me to, like, just refresh my head, refresh my mind. Whatever was on my mind before, by the time I'm done, I'm not really thinking about it the same way that I was. There's nothing better than going to a gym, shooting around, getting some shots up, getting a good sweat in. The only thing better than that is, you know, playing half court 3-on-3 or playing full court 5-on-5. So basketball to me has always been that one thing where, you know, you just whatever's on your mind, it's gone by the time you're done. And everybody has kind of a certain, you know, a different way of doing that. Some people will go for a run. Some people will go lift weights. Some people go watch a movie. But for me, that's always been my go-to.
That's how about Van you, Jess? Nathan says you're a baller.
No, what Van doesn't understand is it's been years since him and I played together. Years. Van actually, it was funny. We were in this league at the LA Athletic Club. And fellas, when I say this league was so competitive, I basically just became like a GM. I'm like, I can't get PT. There's just too many players there. No, listen to this. It went from, it was just members of the gym that were playing. And then all of a sudden there was one team that just had a couple players where I'm like, okay, we're never going to have a chance to beat them. So then we got a couple players that were outside of the gym as well. Next thing you know, we got Drew League players that are playing in this thing. I'm like, for sure, guys, I'm going to be on the bench over here. If anybody needs me, just let me know. Some really good players.
You Jackie Moon yourself.
That was like, you got to play to the competition. We weren't just going to lose every time. Literally was like, okay, we got to go scouting. But I love my escape, no question about it, is typically basketball.
It's funny. I had a, you know, friends when I would play basketball, like, you know, in high school and whatnot. I had a very small group. I'd had maybe like a group of four, maybe six. And we would always be, it'd be me and my friend Ruben versus my friend Brian and his cousin Chris. And my friend Brian was really good. Me and my friend Ruben were not. But my friend Ruben was tall.
Mm-hmm.
So I just told him, you're tall. Block his shot.
Stay around the basket. Yeah, stay around the basket.
I'll do my best. I'll stay in front of him as best as I can. But you're tall. You block him. And I lost every time. My friend Brian was too good. Had he not been lazy, definitely would have been
a good player.
At least Division II.
Jess, I'm the blueprint of, you know how players who are small wish they were big? Every small player wishes they were a big man. And every big man wishes he was like a guard that shoots from the outside and everything. It's so funny to watch basketball, man. There's so much of that. It's like players who are bigger, where their advantages down low are like, no, I'm going to stay outside. And players who are smaller are trying to go down low. It's like, okay, we all got this backwards. We all haven't figured
it out. I know, it's so funny.
But Jess, what's your escape? What do you do?
So, yeah, my escape, the same as Curtis, it's been video games, you know, growing up. I actually wrote
what's the go-to video game right now? What video game are you guys playing most right now?
Oh, man.
Depends what you're into. Right now? So much choices.
Here we go. Look at all these layers.
So I will keep it simple. So right now I have an Xbox and a Nintendo Switch.
Okay.
For my Xbox, my go-to right now is either Madden or NBA 2K, just because it's my sports fix, and I'm on that franchise league with my friends.
Those are fun. 20, bro, 27. Those are fun. They, I mean, are. No matter what, like playing. I remember I used to play my buddy who played at ended up playing at a community college for, you know, football, and just a pure athlete. I was playing in Madden. He knew the way, like, I love NBA, he loves NFL. We'd play, like, by the end of the first quarter, I'm like, I think we're good. You want to restart? I mean, he would just dominate me just because he knew NFL like crazy. But Madden and what's the other? Oh, you said NBA 2K? Man, NBA. That takes me back. Mm-hmm. That's
2K20.
That's awesome. I wish I still played some of those video games. I just haven't in years.
Yeah, and then for the Switch, I go back and forth between a lot of games. It just depends on how I'm feeling. But I go back and forth between Mario Kart, Super Smash Brothers, Legend of Zelda, and Pokemon Sword. I mean, Shield.
Curtis, what are you playing?
So, I'm really bad at shooting games, but that's kind of the popular thing right now. And I play it only when, usually Friday nights, I have, you know, my cousin who lives in Arizona and my other buddy who's in Colorado. That's our time. We meet up. We plan it.
It's a way for you guys to interact.
Yeah, I'm horrible at it, but I rush home from here and join immediately after we get off work here. And, you know, it's more the connection, like, just being, because it feels like you're in the room with your buddies because you can still talk trash. It's great. Still so easy to do it. I think that's kind of, a lot of people love games because you don't even have to be in the same room anymore. It's so advanced now. You could be on the other side of the world and all that. But
well, I will say that is something to, you know, connect with your buddies. I mean, it's kind of similar to people right now having these Zoom calls where it's Zoom happy hour, right? And they're drinking with friends without being with them. I guess there's kind of some similarity to
my
that.
My friend does that, you know, like almost every weekend.
But I guess it's in a competitive manner. So yeah, that's what I would say. My escape's basketball. You guys are obviously choosing some video games, and I'm not too shocked.
Hit us in the breaks. Jess and I are talking about Zelda. So what's
there? You go. Okay, I got it.
I mean, now I walk every now and then. Now I
found
comfort in walking, putting music or podcast in.
That's a great point.
But yeah,
I'm with you. Walking is one of those things. I cut you off there, Jess. Walking is one of those things that's easy to clear the mind.
Yeah, definitely. I do that when I'm really, really like agitated or upset or anything. But first, my go-to would be gaming, and I have a bunch of games, so sometimes I sit there for like 10 minutes just trying to figure out what to play, and then I'm like whatever, and I'll just pick the same game I always play.
All right, great stuff, fellas. We got the director of the new 30 for 30, B. Water, which focuses on Bruce Lee's life and journey. Bao Win is coming up next. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Want to welcome in Bao Win, director of the new 30 for 30, B. Water, focuses on Bruce Lee's life and his journey. Premieres this Sunday, June 7th at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Bao, thank you for doing this. Greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I'd love to, you know, I've never really got an opportunity to kind of hear how the process works and, you know, how this becomes a documentary and obviously the part of this becoming a 30 for 30. Can you walk us through that? I mean, I got so many questions, but I'd love for you to give kind of some background of the concept, the idea, and then how it comes to play.
Yeah, so growing up as an Asian American kid, I didn't really have that many chances to see anyone that looked like me on TV in the films. And if I did see them, it was usually in a negative portrayal, either like as a villain or as a sidekick or like the funny accented servant. And I remember when I was like 7 or 8 years old, I saw Enter the Dragon, like in syndication on television. And I was just like blown away by seeing someone who looked like me on screen play the hero. And that always kind of stuck in my mind for a long time. I was born like 10 years after Enter the Dragon played theatrically, so Bruce Lee had already passed away. And then over time, you know, Bruce Lee's name just became a symbol for Asian representation, the underdog story. And I guess it was about 5 years ago when I had finished my previous film and I was just thinking of what I wanted to do next. And I felt like the story of Bruce Lee, even though there've been many documentaries and films made about his life, I still didn't feel like I knew like really the personal side of Bruce Lee and all the struggles that he had to go through, especially the racism, the prejudice that was existing in America against Asian Americans when he was living. And so that's kind of how the idea of the film formed, in terms of just like focusing on people that really knew him and less about his impact and legacy. And so yeah, I was doing research for a few years, and we were, my producer and I, Julia Nottingham, were looking for funders, other producers to work with. And, you know, she brought up ESPN, and I didn't think of Bruce Lee necessarily as a sports figure specifically. You know, he's a martial artist and he's a film star, but not as a athlete or competitive sports figure. But when I was thinking about like the 30 for 30 documentaries that I loved, like OJ Made in America, it's really like using sports as just a background, as a vessel for telling a deeper, kind of more social based story. And that's the story, as I mentioned, I want to tell about Bruce Lee, talking more about the racism and even like the history of Asian American identity and stereotypes that led up to Bruce Lee being rejected in Hollywood.
Bao Nguyen, who is the director of the new 30 for 30 Be Water, comes out this Sunday at 6 p.m. here Pacific time in L.A. Bao, for those, I mean, I just use myself as an example. So I was born in 1982, and I have seen, you know, a couple of Bruce Lee's films, but I wasn't around when, you know, kind of like you mentioned, right, when he was as big as he was in the 70s, did I really know his cultural impact? I don't. So that's why I think I'm so looking forward to this documentary coming out on Sunday. What are some of the things you learned about Bruce Lee when putting the this documentary together? What are some stuff that you think, you know, stand out to you that you didn't know prior?
You know, we always think of like Bruce Lee as this teacher, right? This guru that taught martial arts to people like Steve McQueen, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But what I learned just kind of talking to the people who knew him most intimately, going to the cities where he resided, including Seattle, L.A., Oakland, Hong Kong, he was as much of a student as he was a teacher. He was absorbing lessons from everyone he met, especially when he first arrived in America. He arrived with, you know, $100 in his pocket, first living in San Francisco for a little bit and then really settling in Seattle. And one of his first students was this man named Jesse Glover, African-American student who wanted to learn self-defense martial arts because he was a victim of police brutality. And that's obviously really relevant today and timely. Sure. And, you know, Bruce taught Jesse, even though most Chinese, you know, gung fu instructors wouldn't teach people of other races at that time. They kind of want to keep it to themselves. But Bruce was so open-minded about teaching others. And at the same time, meeting someone like Jesse Glover really informed Bruce of America and what, you know, the different facets of America, different communities, different types of individuals, and how America's always changing. And so, in addition to Jesse, his first girlfriend who we spoke to in the film, Amy Sandbo, who's never spoken on camera about Bruce ever in her life, she was Japanese-American. She was part of the internment camps, and she taught him about what it means to be like an Asian-American, because he always just divided the idea of either you're Asian or you're American. You can't be both, and she taught him all about that. And then obviously Kareem later on in his life, Kareem was one of his closest students, and Kareem taught him about the civil rights movement, the Black liberation movement. So all these things are aspects of his education about America, about the world, and how he treated other people. So that was, you know, enlightening to me, because you just think of Bruce Lee as this like martial arts action star, right? Sure. And you never think about him as an immigrant American trying to assimilate and learn the ways of America and also teach people about his ways. That's one of the reasons he started teaching Kung Fu, is that he wanted to like connect with his fellow Americans through his martial arts, through his sport, right? And I think that's the beauty of sports sometimes, is using it as a way to connect people.
Bao Nguyen is the director of the new 30 for 30 Be Water. It comes out this Sunday at 6 o'clock Pacific. Bao, if you can, you know, just kind of explain a little bit of what was Bruce Lee's childhood like? What was he was, if I'm correct, born in San Francisco, but then for the first 18 years of his life, is that correct, in Hong Kong and then back here in the States? Can you talk a little bit just about his upbringing and
what got him to be, you know, somebody that was not only so driven, but somebody that was trying to do something different from the norm. And, you know, like you mentioned, he had a lot of different, or it seems like different prejudices while here in the States, and how he overcame that.
Yeah, I mean, even in Hong Kong, he had faced a lot of prejudice because his mom was biracial. She had some European blood in her, and so people in Hong Kong saw him just not as a pure Chinese. So it just shows you, like, everywhere in the world, people kind of can face the same type of racial prejudice. Well, you know, when he was young, I mean, first off, not a lot of people knew that he was born in San Francisco. So I think that's, like, a really important part of the story, is that he is American by birth, and that, yeah, he left to Hong Kong, and his father was a opera singer, and then his father kind of got him interested in being an actor. So he was a child actor, much the same way, like, Macaulay Culkin was huge when he was a child. Bruce Lee was up on that level as well. And I think that also explains, like, Bruce Lee's talents in his performance and theatrics, right? Because from an early age, he knew how to perform in front of the camera, perform in front of the crowd. I think that definitely, you can see that in how magnetic he is on screen, especially in his films.
You know, it's interesting, Bao, too, because, you know, as you mentioned, and you kind of walk through a little bit of history of Bruce Lee, and I think a lot of it for me, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who will get a chance to watch this documentary, we'll just learn stuff about Bruce Lee that we never knew before. And I think that's what's most fascinating about most of these documentaries, the 30 for 30. I'm sure you're aware, and I don't know if you got a chance to watch all 10 of those episodes for Last Dance. But most of these, I always walk away, especially in a documentary like this, where I know that I'm going to learn a lot of different information that I never knew before. Can you walk us through just how the documentary is laid out, and what could we be expecting this this upcoming Sunday?
Sure. Well, you know, I don't think anyone can make a definitive film about any subject, right? This is very much a specific lens that I wanted to take on Bruce Lee. And I think for a lot of, like, hardcore fans who have been following him 40 years, a lot of it might not be new information, but I wanted to take a more kind of personal lens of how I saw Bruce Lee, and, you know, the insecurities, the vulnerabilities, and the struggles that he had to go through, especially kind of wearing his race on his face as an Asian American. It wasn't easy in the 1960s to be Asian, given, you know, the Vietnam War was boiling up, there was the Korean War, and then there was World War II a couple of decades before. And, you know, I wanted to interweave those two stories, like the story of what it meant to be an Asian American, being like the story of kind of the racial inequities of America that Bruce had to face, and then just the coming of age of Bruce and Bruce becoming Bruce Lee, because we all know the name Bruce Lee as this myth, right, this icon, but we don't really know a lot about, again, his insecurities, his fears. So those are the things that I learned about, too, through the people who knew him best.
Bao, final question. Again, I greatly appreciate your time joining the Sliwa Show here. What is Bruce Lee's legacy today around the world? You know, in some of the Asian countries, what is his legacy? And I say that obviously he passed away at such a young age. How do most see him today, and what is that legacy that you think is continuing?
I think people see him as someone who faced a lot of obstacles because of what he looked like, but he had such a belief in himself and what he can achieve that it's something that a lot of people can aspire to, because we all have our bad days, we all have our challenges, but if we're able to kind of push ourselves and believe in ourselves, that's something that's really powerful in the human spirit. And also, I think, like I was speaking about earlier, he was not judging people on what they look like. He was not trying to create divisions or build barriers between the people that he was meeting. He was always trying to bridge the gap. It's a martial arts term, but I think it's pretty appropriate for how he approached people and the communities that he lived and worked in. Again, Seattle, Oakland, Hong Kong, L.A. in the 60s was rife with a lot of conflict, just like we see that conflict today. But he was always believing in what, you know, multiculturalism, diversity, listening to each other and hearing out each other's differences, how important that was. And I hope, you know, in this time of I can't even explain what time we're living in, because it's so crazy. This type of time, it's, you know, Bruce Lee's message and his ability to kind of bridge the gap and be allies with people around him is really important.
Bao, I'm sorry, one more. I forgot to ask you. Describe for those who don't know, Be Water. What is that? What does that exactly mean? And we know that's a famous line from Bruce Lee, but give us the explanation of it.
Yeah, so Be Water is kind of a mentality. It's one of his most famous quotes, but it's something he learned early on when he was training as a martial artist under Yip Man. And, you know, he was kind of this kid who was a bit rigid and always fighting. So he had to learn to be more flexible, be more fluid. And then I think he applied that to his whole life. And I think that resonates within the film too, because there's these moments that we see in the film where we're talking about like xenophobic policies, like the Chinese Exclusion Act or Yellow Peril or the Model Minority Myth, and just racism, Hollywood racism in America. And those are kind of like rocks that Bruce Lee has to get around. So he's always flowing, he's always fluid, and these are the rocks that he has to flow through. Just like, again, in America right now, we're hitting or crashing against this rock that we have to find a way to get through and get through as a people, really. I think that kind of encompasses the idea of what being water means.
Bao Nguyen, director of the new 30 for 30 Be Water. Don't forget this Sunday premieres Sunday, June 7th at 6 p.m. on ESPN, a great 30 for 30. Bao, thank you for your time. Looking forward to obviously watching this documentary, and I appreciate your insight.
Great. Thank you so much. Hope you all enjoy it.
All right. Looking forward to that coming up this Sunday, 6 o'clock, 30 for 30 on ESPN, obviously. So we'll get a chance to watch really one of the more anticipated. There were three documentaries that were all released or were starting to be promoted after The Last Dance. This is one of them. So I'm certainly looking forward to that. Okay. When we come back, NBA looks like it's coming back. 22 teams returning. I told everybody, and I've been saying it all week, and I said it tonight as well, I love the idea. I love the plan. I love having more than just the 16 teams that are invited to Orlando, Florida. Stephen A. Smith on First Take, him and Jalen Rose were discussing it. One of them likes the idea. The other one does it. We'll talk about that coming up next. Stay right here. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, a lot happened today. First of all, just a quick thank you. Neil Payne from 538 Sports, thank you for joining the show. Dylan Hernandez from the LA Times. Bob Nguyen, director of the new 30 for 30 Be Water. So great to have all of them a part of the show. Great perspective. Talked, obviously, a lot of different topics. Today's a busy day. Today is definitely a busy day. You know, a lot of things specifically about the chatter and the conversation around Drew Brees' comments, players like LeBron James reacting, a lot of the NFL players reacting. I put it this way, and this is just my opinion. I think one of the most important things in a time like now is to listen and to try and look at things from other people's perspective. And I don't know if Drew Brees did that. And that doesn't mean that Drew Brees can't have his own opinion. That's not what I'm referring to at all. But I don't think that he looked at it from somebody else's perspective who is struggling, who is hurting right now, who does feel like there isn't equality in this country. So I think that's why he's getting, obviously, a ton of heat. The other news from today definitely came from the NBA. Sources are saying that the NBA is getting ready to approve, and those sources are usually Adrian Wojnarowski, a 22-team return with 8 regular season games. So that's the big stuff that came out today as well. Stephen A. Smith on First Take was talking with Jalen Rose about this. He's not that crazy about the 22-game returning plan. Here's his thoughts.
Let me tell y'all something right now. And Max, get that smirk off your face, because you know where I'm going. Max, get that smirk off your face for right now, Max. Get that smirk off your face. Let me tell y'all something. All of this stuff. Oh, let me bring the home court to Orlando. Oh, extra fouls. But
I knew you was going to say something about that.
Stop it. And all of this gimmicky nonsense. What the hell is going on? I mean, we got Dear Abby running the sport or something. What's going on? What's going on? They better not do this stuff. Look, I am a proponent of this. You take the tag, the emblem that you put at midcourt or whatever, and plaster it on the damn midcourt. And get one of them rubber. What is it made of? Rubber or plaster? Just plaster it at midcourt. All right, that's a home team. Let's play basketball. What's all of this nonsense going on here? We got to modify rules and engage in gimmickry. Y'all had off a couple of months. You're professional athletes. You're still getting paid. We haven't been playing. We got to resume the damn sport, probably without fans in attendance. Get your behind on the damn court and play basketball if you going to play. All of this bringing courts into Orlando and all. Stop. We don't need all of that. That's additional people working, by the way, which just debunks the whole social distancing issue and talk about safety, which is supposed to be our primary concern. Look, just get on the court and play if that's what you go do. All of this gimmick stuff and looking for an advantage. Oh, we got to take care of the team that had the best record. Stop. It's an aberration. History, we all know what's happened here with this pandemic. Just ball.
All right, that's Stephen A. Smith right there. By the way, on the other side of it, the 22 games returning, he wasn't crazy about that plan. Let me say this, a couple things. I've used the word gimmicky before. I don't want gimmicky in the NBA as well. I am definitely, I'm definitely a believer when it comes to just try to, you know, keep the game as close to its truest form as much as possible. Yes, there's going to be some people that complain that there is no home court advantage and things along those lines, but that's okay. I don't need to see, you know, anything else other than what the NBA seems like they're about to do, and I think a lot of fans will feel the same way. 22 teams come in. Okay, those teams had a shot. They were within 6 games of making the playoffs with about 19 games left to go. So what does that mean? That means one team from the East, the Washington Wizards, would have a shot of making the postseason. 5 additional teams would have a chance for that 8th spot in the Western Conference. I'm sure Memphis doesn't feel all good about that, but the reality is it's going to make for a great playoff before the playoffs. You're going to get a chance to see Zion Williamson. You're going to get a chance to see Brandon Ingram. You'll get a chance to see Ja Morant, of course, C.J. McCollum, De'Aaron Fox. You could go down the list, Damian Lillard, of all these players that we wouldn't get to see without, you know, some type of an adjustment, understanding and knowing that those teams had a shot still to get into the postseason. Quick reminder here, as I mentioned always, 710 wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays. Don't forget, email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, if you want to nominate a winner today. Post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. So we appreciate everybody that's being a part of that. That's with Valvoline. It's with Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, and Shuteria.com. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. Appreciate all of LA for tuning in. We're back tomorrow starting at 6:30 LA. Have a great rest of your night.